Now stay tuned for To Your Health on WPVC LP Charlottesville, the show where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Now here's your host, MC Blair.
Good morning. Good morning. Good to talk to you. Hope you can hear me. All right. Awesome. Yeah, we're here. This is Saturday morning, and welcome to Your Health. As I said, where food's on the table. We talk about all kinds of good things here. So first off, we've got our headlines. Local food markets promote healthy people and economy. Now, this is in Kansas, but it shows how this important movement is growing. The whole state may be waking up to the fact that buying local is not only a mechanism to better physical health, but also economic health as well. The North Central Region Planning Commission, which serves Marshall and 11 other counties, is forming a food and farm task force to study local food production and help develop markets for local growers. We here at To Your Health believe we're close to this happening because Charlottesville and the surrounding counties are aware of the vast potential market of our communities to not only lower the obesity and type 2 diabetes rates, but also to keep more money circulating locally. I'll tell you what, it is so important to buy local. You absolutely support our farmers. And let's see here, trying to get over fun facts. All right, here we go. Let's see. All right, trying to find another one here real quick. What foods cause high triglycerides? Triglycerides are a type of blood and body fat, and they're from foods that you eat or released from your liver to meet short-term energy needs. When we eat too many fatty foods, the excess triglycerides are stored as body fat. Hello? Extra unwanted pounds leading to a variety of ailments. And refined sugar is the number one culprit. Absolutely. So you minimize your consumption of foods such as candy, ice cream, flavored, sweetened yogurts, sweetened juices and other drinks, cereals, honey, molasses, jams, jellies, and canned fruit. Fresh fruit is incredibly fulfilling. Most people will feel satisfied after one large apple, which contains 23 grams of sugar. 13 of those are fructose, and those are natural. So they're good to eat, obviously. Compare that to a 16-ounce bottle of Coke, which contains 52 grams of sugar, 30 of which are fructose, and this is according to self-nutrition data. Eat the above foods in extreme moderation and only those made locally with unrefined ingredients, or, if you must have them, look for products with unrefined ingredients. Now that's very important. Very, 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 very important. And, I wanted to talk briefly about our mitochondria. Our mitochondria, this is what got me personally on the local and organic food movement, because taking care of our mitochondria is extremely, extremely important. It's what we are. As a matter of fact, the mitochondria are the power plants that generate most of the energy our cells, and therefore our bodies and minds, need to function. They convert the absorbed food nutrients to ATP, which is adenosine triphosphate. It's the driving force for the creation of proteins, antibodies, cell walls, and new cells, and without which we would not exist. So doesn't it make sense that our number one concern should be maintaining our mitochondria? Doing so enables us to live our lives at a high level, and I think that's what most of us would like to do. And, you know, when our first-gen ancestors walked on Mother Earth, they ate what was locally available. True, celebrations of a successful hunt and other feast-like rituals did occur, but aside from the family or the tribe eating together, which of course is extremely important, food just was, and the important day-to-day activities were the focus. Now just imagine if the majority of just one community's leaders, including the elected, the civil, religious, and social centers of influence, were to agree with this common sense premise. Eventually, through focused and coordinated projects, that one community could achieve a greater, I believe, than 75% of the members eating from, volunteering for, or contributing to the local food system. You know, we've been distracted by endless streams of food advertising. And taste has become more important to most people than, will this food or that food be an asset or a liability to my body or your temple, depending on your belief structure. Please also know that our bodies, if healthy, can eat some of those sinful delights and not suddenly experience a health crisis. So extreme moderation is the key. Now, I'm going to play an excerpt from an interview I did with Carter Wallace. He was the farm manager out at Farfields in Afton. And he has some most interesting takes on food as medicine. Now, Carter, I mentioned earlier about food as medicine, and you actually said that you like to think of it more as agriculture as medicine. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I think probably like most people, I had a more specific calling to sort of redirect my attention and physical labor and such toward being more involved in agriculture as a producer. And then when you follow one specific calling, it opens up to a number of different callings. So for some people, it's maybe it's in a digestive disorder, that says, hey, I got to figure something else out. This is not working in my diet. For some people, it's just a disconnection from nature and they follow that. For some people, it's just an aversion to pesticides on their apples. You know, I think what I've found is particularly as we think about food as medicine or as I observe the what might be posted about widely, food as medicine, it's a very true statement and there's a lot in there, and it's really a gateway statement. It's a gateway to consider far more about what food is. And it's a gateway to consider not just what we eat, but how we eat it. And when one starts considering that, the desire to have a good apple, an apple that tastes good perhaps, or an apple that doesn't have pesticides on it, or an apple that built soil in the production of the apple as opposed to lost it. You start to really unravel a whole host of questions. And that is an invitation to a culture of the as medicine more than just the food as medicine. When we desire a really healthy food product, generally, and I can't say I could think of a counterexample to this, we're going to find that that's going to lead us all the way back to an entirely different lifestyle. And really, when you think of there's plenty of examples of really impressive yogis and such that might eat an incredibly simple blend that would shock your nutritionist. And you're like, how could you be alive on this? You know, as we mature and down that path of food as medicine, I think everybody comes to understand that it's not just what you eat, but how you eat it. We're not just what we eat, we're how we eat. And we're not just how and what we eat, we're how and what we consume. And so our the dollars that we spend obviously are an amazing immediate implication on the landscape around us.
True.
To pay for a thing is to encourage that thing to continue to exist in the world. So does that thing build soil or does it send soil down the river to the Chesapeake? What agriculture is, the production of food, fiber, things useful to human people from our land and seas, really generally understood. That at the core of it, in the way in which we engage agriculture most basically, most commonly, every day, is eating. Eating is an agricultural act, to quote the great sage. And eating also the most intimate engagement with nature on a day in, day out basis. Nature becomes us, and we literally project ourselves onto nature. Nature literally takes the image of what we are encouraging of it. So what we find with this, with the idea of food as medicine, is it is a gateway drug. It's a gateway path. It's a lure. It's a fish hook for us to be grabbed and ask, what is really making me sick? What is it? Is it really just apples? Because guess what? There's a lot of impressive people who have some seriously open chakras, who don't eat nearly enough to that I would even say should keep them alive, and they're doing just fine, right? So there's something else that sustains us. There's something else that sustains culture. There's something else that brings us happiness than, say, needing a certain organic food or needing this and that. And oftentimes, the food as medicine can become an anxiety, you know? So you know, that's not to say anything of this is wrong. It's all just complex and it's rich and it's an invitation to go deeper. And that's why I think it benefits us. And, you know, if you're not there, sorry to spoil the ending. But if you are, then you can bask in this. It's really agriculture as medicine more than it is food. But you got to start somewhere. And for some people, that's food. For me, that was a huge part of it. Wherever you are on the journey, I hope you keep walking.
Well, that gives us an awful lot to think about, Carter. And folks, I encourage you to look more into eating the right things, yes, but also, you know, as Carter said, becoming part of everything around, you know, through yoga, through meditation, whatever your pathway is great. And I just wanted to thank Carter for everything you've given us this morning. Have you got anything else for us, Carter?
Well, you know, these are powerful times we're in. And if there's anything that I feel like I'm meditating on in this season, it's solidarity with the First Peoples of this nation who are putting their bodies and putting their everything on the line to protect water. And water really is quite the meditation. When we think about what water is as a purifier, as a solvent, as a barometer of the health of human culture, are our lives making water more clean or more impure? What is the downstream impact of our life? How is water life? You know, the great naturalist Aldo Leopold said, the water cycle and the life cycle are one, right? And then in the Lakota tradition, the anthem is Mani Wakoni, water is life, right? So how can we look into our religions to pull out that an understanding of that sacrality to enhance the way we experience and use and abuse water? How can we restore a sacred relationship?
Well, that's pretty much it. Now, Carter, I mentioned earlier about food as medicine, and you know, I just wanted to add to that about the water. Now that we have an EPA guy who says let's dump all the coal waste into the water and to heck with it, you know, it's just absolutely crazy. He also just approved a pesticide from Dow Chemical that was due to be banned starting this December. Well, he's erased that. It's not going to be banned. They're going to use it. And it is linked to childhood lowering the IQs of children. That's our future, folks. Just want you to think about that. We're going to take a little break. And we're back. I want to talk briefly about probiotics, and actually it's probably better to just let Ethan Zuckerman of Blue Ridge Bucha, kombucha, unbelievable. And I asked him about probiotics. About it. It's pretty exciting. What is a probiotic?
Right? Beneficial bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
Probiotic. The basic.
The basic. and bacteria in your gut, good gut bacteria.
Yeah. So beyond kombucha, just sort of the idea of probiotics, we are agreeing as a culture that probiotics are beneficial. They're helpful. They're things that we want in our bodies. We are understanding that, you know, probiotics are helpful to our digestive system,
Our immune system.
Our immune system. There are, you know, studies that are linking gut health to brain health. There's a lot of interesting information out there. We are seeing that with a strong, healthy bacteria, probiotic-rich digestive system, that the food, the healthy food we're all looking for and we're eating, that those probiotics are helping our bodies, our systems, assimilate the beneficial components of our food and really bringing it into the rest of our body. Yeah, so probiotics, I remember as a kid, you know, if we ever got really hurt or had to go to the hospital and we had to have an antibiotic, I remember my mother was always really advocating, let's get some good yogurt in you, let's get that good sauerkraut, really get the probiotics back in, because antibiotics are amazing when we need them. You know, they can really, really help in a, you know, dire situation, but they're also taking all the bacteria away. So we feel it's nice to bring those back in. And much like a really good yogurt, a really good unpasteurized sauerkraut, kombucha also has these probiotics that can help line the digestive system.
So it's like reinvigorating your gut.
Essentially.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's kind of like reinvigorating the soil if the soil's depleted.
Absolutely.
Keep it going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a connection there, I think.
I think so.
Healthy gut, healthy soil, healthy bodies, healthy food. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, you are certified organic.
Correct.
What does that entail?
Well, I think the USDA label, organic, you know, I looked at it since that came on the shelf as something like, okay, that means something. It was never really clear other than the basic guidelines of what that meant. But going through the process to be USDA certified organic has, I think, really... what would be the word? Just kind of reinstituted this thought that it really means something. Essentially, going through the process has just sort of, I'm at a loss of words for a moment.
Well, I think it's given us respect for what that label
means. Thank you.
And now we really seek that out in many of the purchasing decisions that we make. Obviously, people using organic methods who are growing here locally, we will buy without a certified organic seal. But when we're looking to purchase something from a larger brand, we're looking for the seal knowing, you know, it guarantees that you're not going to have GMOs in your food, which is important to us. Also, we just had our inspection actually on Monday, our annual inspection, and it's a very rigorous process. So, you know, you're assuring that not only are you doing the best that you can in your methods and ingredient sourcing, but even the people that you source your ingredients from. So when they come to inspect us, they're looking not only at us, but they're looking at all the companies that we work with and ensuring that those companies are following ethical practices in, you know, compliance too, which is not something as a small business that we would really be able to do. We would be, you know, trying to source something and taking someone's word for how they grew it, but we're not going to be able to go to every single farm and figure it out. Well, the organic seal on that product ensures us that those people have gone through the same rigorous standards that we have. So it just gives us a lot of faith in what we're putting out there on the market, that it's, you know, the most healthful, the highest quality. You're not going to get any unintended GMOs or pesticides or anything like that.
I think that's the word. It has really renewed our faith in the USDA label going through the process. Like, oh, that label really means something.
Yes.
Which is very cool.
Well, it does. Absolutely. Well, we're going to take a little break here. You are listening to Your Health. Good morning. You are listening to Your Health here on WPVC Resistance Radio. And I just came across a headline, Organic Food Market Planned for Appomattox. That's pretty cool. They got Appomattox, Don and Nancy Wilk, always had thought about opening their own business in order to spend some more time together. After one visit to Appomattox, they decided to buy an old building on Church Street and open an organic food market. And it's pretty cool, you know. He says it was something we were working on for some time. The idea was always there. It's still developing. They moved in 2015 from Pennsylvania. They used a portion of his pension to purchase the 1912 downtown building for $156,000. They were inspired to open the market because of their own experience with clean eating, a new diet trend that emphasizes consuming minimally processed foods that are as close as possible to their natural state and in the local area. Kitchen will be used to cook clean food recipes, and customers will be able to eat in an indoor dining space that looks out onto Church Street or on an outdoor deck behind the 4,800-square-foot building, which is located across the street from the old Appomattox train depot. That's actually a pretty neat part of town, by the way, and it's not very far away. She said that the family had to learn to eat differently, and as hard as it is to eat clean at home, it's harder when going out to eat or traveling. And, you know, that's true. My wife and I, we really have to be careful if we're going to go out and eat, which generally we do only occasionally and only at a restaurant that sources local produce and meat like Maya or Hamilton's. And there are others as well. A big part of why we're here to build in a Christian community, build things biblically. Well, I've got something later about that, if you happen to believe in a deity, regardless of your religion. She said they're going to build a slow, sure. We don't want to get down the road and say, oh, we got something different. You know, we have to do something different because we have to pay the mortgage. So they're going to do pretty well there. Everyone from raw milk providers to a yak farmer have offered to bring products to this market. She said it's really exciting to see people stepping up, and it took someone to plant the flag and say, this is what we're doing. That's true. You know, you do have to step up, and we're doing quite a bit here in Charlottesville. That's for sure. The City Schoolyard Gardens and the Urban Agricultural Collective and the Food Summit over there at UVA. We've got a lot of things going. The Food Justice Network, tell you what, man, a lot of good local farms. They said that they want to build a combined effort with other small businesses. Well, that's community. There you go. They've got the right idea, those. Just wanted to bring that to you. And you know, I'll tell you, it's absolutely amazing what's going on in the food business. You say, what is sustainability in agriculture? Well, sustainability lately, and the multiple use of this particular word has been getting in the past couple years. The marketing power that the word sustainability wields in a society today is somewhat mind-boggling, especially when it's centered around the world of agriculture. To sustain something means to maintain for an undetermined length of time. In reference to agriculture, it takes on the additional loaded meaning of conservation, preservation, and safety. You know, that also includes the carbon sequestration, which they do a lot of in a properly raised farm. The consumers want to feel good about the food they eat, and the idea of sustainable farming gives them security and less guilt when they purchase food in the store. It gives them a comfortable position from which they live and feed their family. Sustainability is personal, emotionally, and eternal in its perception power. Yep, that's absolutely true, folks. That is absolutely true. What else we got here? You're listening to 94.7 WPVC. The show is To Your Health. I'm MC Blair. And we're just going through some things here. Let's see. Oh, some, you know, the local food hub here in Charlottesville got some grant money awarded to them. It's a conservation fund. They grant between $5,000 and $10,000. And they're sponsored by CSX, the large transportation company. And the grant is to support transporting healthy food. And that's what the local food hub does. The goal for the grant program is to help local food organizations fill in the gaps and enhance their ability to provide healthy local food to nearby communities. Yep, that's exactly right. And the local food hub, their mission is to partner with Virginia farmers to increase community access to local food. It provides the support services, infrastructure, and market opportunities that connect people with food grown close to home. And that's what it's about. Grant funds will be used to install additional cold storage at the local food hub warehouse. Now, I got a fun fact for you. It says the main principle of biodynamic farming is that the entire farm exists as a single entity without the need for outside inputs. You know, Carter was talking a little bit about that and the whole. It's all about the whole culture, agriculture. Where an organic farm may purchase organic seeds or organic feed for livestock, a biodynamic farm produces everything on the premise. We had a guest here early on, John Whiteside from Wolf Creek Farm, and he does that, folks. He produces everything on the farm. He breeds his cattle. He makes his own hay to when they have to winter over, and they always do. It takes a couple of years to bring one of those animals up to slaughter weight, as opposed to 9 months for a grain-fed cow, unfortunately, unhealthy. But he does everything himself there at Wolf Creek Farm. It's pretty much biodynamic farm. It really is. And by the way, the next time you see a spider crawling around your house, look at the bright side. It's probably feasting on a bunch of other insects and providing you with free pest control. Unless it's a black widow or a brown recluse, I wouldn't want either of those in my house. You get rid of it. But most of the time, just let her be. A new study released on Tuesday says that spiders eat an estimated 400 to 800 million tons of insects every year. There's a lot of spiders. For comparison, the entire human population consumes 400 million tons of meat and fish every year. So the spiders eat up to twice what we eat. Whales eat 500 million tons annually. Now, that's all the whales that are out there. So spiders eat more than whales. All the spiders out there. The spiders are a natural pest control without poison. You know, they're actually a natural predator on wasps. They prey on wasps. That's kind of neat. I like that. I really do. I sure do. Boy, I'll tell you what. We've got so many cool things going on. We've got the mitochondria. Yep. Extreme moderation. It's amazing stuff. So we have got another interesting thing here. There's 7 tips to grow the perfect garden with your kids. And we'll start with this, and then we'll take a break and go into that a little more, and then we'll hear from City Schoolyard Gardens. We spend time in the garden every day. That's the first tip. Sometimes gardening can seem overwhelming. It's like a full-time job, but you don't need to dedicate countless hours if you dedicate small amounts of time each and every day. Make it a family event. Twice as much gets done with more people. You know, just 15 minutes of weeding every day will keep your garden looking perfect. And have you ever experienced garden envy? One thing the gardens I admire and have in common is the daily commitment of the gardeners. So they transition from school to home in the garden. You know, that's one cool thing, folks. You can, you know, the school's over, the kids come home, spend a little time in the garden, and that helps you connect with your kids and with nature. And so they're more willing to talk to you, to open up. It's absolutely true. Another tip is use a garden planner. You know, when's the right time to plant? Sometimes it's hard to know. A garden planner is helpful. Many seed catalogs come with the garden planners. If you choose a seed company close to your location, then the planner will be right on. Many garden stores give out free garden planners. We were just given one that you slide a red line to your last frost date. It tells you when to plant and when to expect the harvest. There's also some online versions of garden planners that you can just type in your zip code, and they'll give you the ones that are for your area. Also, you need to use some high-quality seeds. Very, very important. They, you know, it's best to choose seeds from a latitude and climate close to your own. Furthermore, organic or biodynamic seeds are the best choice for your soil health. And we're going to take another little break here, and we will be back shortly. And we're back here to your health. Just wanted to keep on going with the tips on the garden. And let's see, we've got the perfect spacing with a seeding square. Now, this seeding square is so cool. It has, you put it over the soil, and it's got the right spaces. When it comes to the garden, it says the children want to help and certainly don't want to discourage that. But at the same time, you don't want 50 little lettuce plants coming up in one square foot. even with the tendency to manage seed planting, inevitably an area of overplanting occurs. They say last year it was the kale and the arugula, what was crowded and needed of thinning, and of course thinning's like a waste of seed and potential food. But one solution to perfect seed spacing is a seeding square. This unique device is color-coded, and it comes with a planting guide to help you figure out proper spacing. To use it, you just simply press the seeding square into the soil, use the poker in the appropriate colored hole for the seeds you're planting, and deposit the seeds. Pretty easy. And it's also fun for the kids, especially with the colors. It's like, you know, plant by numbers or plant by color, and the kids get right into it. It's great for them, and it helps them grow more food by maximizing the planting space for the most yield. And it's the perfect for raised boxes and beds, garden rows, or square foot gardening. It also cuts down on weeds. Next tip is mulch. Mulching is important for water conservation, weed control, and soil health. Just takes a little bit of time, and it'll save you a lot of time later on. Organic mulch, of course, is the best, or something from a biodynamic farm. You can purchase straw, make sure it's not seeded, or use grass clippings. I don't like the plastic or landscape fabric. It deteriorates, and there's no way to completely remove it from your garden, you know, 20 years later. So I find pieces of red plastic mulch that were used on strawberries. Strawberries are gone, but the mulch remains. Use a water timer. That's for water conservation. Some people really enjoy hand watering their garden, but the time is better spent weeding and planting. Garden timer keeps your garden hydrated. You can set it for nighttime when evaporation rates are low. And the water timer also makes it easy to take a vacation from your garden without finding a neighbor to water while you're away. It's a simple device. It's an investment that will last 4 years, and it makes watering precise, you know, once you get it figured out. And the last tip is to feed organically. As a general rule, you try to fertilize after weeding. They don't like to weed that frequently, so it works out. You can overfeed and burn your plants, but the opposite effect of underfeeding can be just as detrimental. Organic fertilizer is very important for your soil health and maximum nutritional content in your garden food. Organic food is higher in antioxidants than its conventional counterparts, and we've talked about that before. Plus, there's no pesticides or herbicides. That'll lower your kids' IQ. Don't want that. Plus, you don't want your children exposed to chemicals when working in the garden. Gardening is very rewarding. It benefits both mind and body, and anyone can do it. So, hopefully that'll help you out. Now, I want to play a little something from City Schoolyard Gardens that really shows the benefits, some of the benefits, for children.
Great partners as well. I think another really good one, and I was actually talking to one of the school board members last night, and she was mentioning a family coming through and getting to see Buford Garden as they're moving to the area and how excited they were about the opportunity for their family to take part in what's going on there at Buford, which is the middle school here in the city. About 95% of parents and teachers feel that having a CSG garden at their school is very important. And so she got to see that firsthand with this family, that they were, you know, looking around the school, trying to make some decisions, saw that garden, and fell in love.
Oh my.
Which is what we want to happen for families.
Absolutely.
And students, you know, for their families as well.
Yeah, and I imagine the kids and any of the participants with the city schoolyard garden is they feel maybe a sense of pride and obviously health, hope, you know. Do you find the students do better in school?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's a variety of reasons why. I mean, you can look at different, if you're talking about actual academic performance or feeling as though they have a place to be that belongs to them. There's many different reasons why students who are engaged in being in the garden, being healthy. I mean, that, of course, having a healthy snack before you have to take a test or, you know, do work in class, yeah, that can have a significant effect on how you perform. So there's a ton. We have been doing evaluations over the years, so we have research to back that up as well as to how the experience having the garden there, participating in the programs, really does provide great outcomes for the students.
Oh, man. You're listening to Your Health here on WPVC 94.7 Resistance Radio, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And we're talking with Jeanette Abinader and Aline Carey of City Schoolyard Garden. You mentioned before about how Charlottesville High School actually has an accredited course now. Is that...
Well, they're starting one.
They're starting one in the fall.
Yeah, so the garden at Charlottesville High School has been there for a few years now. Mm-hmm. Peter Davis, who's a teacher at the high school, started the garden just on his own. He's been doing it for a couple years, and he has a garden to market class. So it's a class where students grow things in the garden and then learn about how to market them. They have a small CSA, they grow transplants, and then they sell those.
Oh, my.
So that's been really amazing. And then we just joined forces. So he's been doing that for a few years. We just joined forces with him this year, and the principal, Dr. Irizarry, is super excited about the garden and wants to make it an integral part. So they're offering a new urban agricultural course this fall.
Wow.
Yeah.
So now would that go through the summer?
No, the course will be during the school year. It'll be a regular academic course.
Oh, okay.
At least at this point, they're not planning for it to be in the summer.
Yeah, I was just saying that's a good growing time.
Right, yeah.
You know, just in the summer, to keep the kids off the streets.
Right. We use a lot of the gardens are used in the summer for summer camps.
We
partner
sense.
Up with Parks and Rec and the Boys and Girls Club and the PB&J Kitchen, lots of different partners, as Aline mentioned, and have different camps out at the gardens.
Oh, that is great.
Yeah.
So you've got this seedling giveaway.
So one of the things at Buford Middle School, where we have a full-time garden educator at the school, she hosts a daily garden aid class. That's Emily Axelbaum. She has two classes. And one of the goals, as the students coming up from the elementary school into middle school, they're starting to learn more about civic engagement, about leadership. So the students that are in this class, they take responsibility for the garden all the way from ordering seeds this time of year, designing the garden, all the way to, you know, planting, seeding, caring, harvesting. And in the spring, as part of their community service hours, they use a hoop house that we have put up, and they grow all kinds of seedlings. They grow over 5,000 seedlings.
Wow.
And then distribute them to organizations in this across the city, nonprofits, community gardens, that we work with, you know, various groups, and the students get to take some home too.
Oh, man,
yeah,
that's a great idea.
Yeah,
and then everything that's left over, we have a seedling sale.
Yeah,
so that the public can also come on in. And so this spring, that'll be May 4th and 5th for the public to come in after we've been able to donate to area partners.
So that's May 4th and 5th, location?
At Buford.
Oh, at Buford Middle School.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the evening, probably.
In the evening.
Like 4 or 5 o'clock.
4
yeah.
or 5 o'clock, and there'll be announcements for
we'll
that.
We'll have it on our website,
yeah. Okay. So that, and that's www.cityschoolyardgarden.org is the website for that. What's your mission?
Do you want me to hit that, Aline? Sorry.
Yeah, sure. We always talk about how we pitch ourselves, how we talk to you all about what we do. The short answer is that we're here to cultivate academic achievement, health, environmental stewardship, and community engagement through garden-based experiential learning in Charlottesville City Schools. So I think the academic part of it is sometimes what people are worried about. Is this going to be academically stimulating and rigorous for the students? And it absolutely is. And there's, as you heard about the classes at the high school as well as at Buford Middle School, there is that academic tie. What we do in the elementary schools as well with the programming there, whether it's First Piece to the Table or Harvest of the Month, there is a specific academic tie to everything that we're doing as we're getting them engaged, mm-hmm. giving them leadership skills to grow on. And again, that learning about healthy food, healthy living, healthy bodies.
That's amazing. You know, I'll tell you, they're doing such a great job over there at City Schoolyard Gardens. And Aline and Jeanette, It's so good for the kids, and they learn so much. They learn to eat properly. They take that information back to their parents and spend time. You know, I heard a lot of the people have gardens at home, and that keeps them family oriented, which is so important. And I wanted to talk a little bit about Dr. Terry Walls. She's out in Iowa. She had late-stage secondary progressive MS, and she was told that she didn't have a long time, you know, left on this planet. She was in a zero-gravity chair. She had two canes to go from, you know, office to office when she was practicing. And she used to like to be out in nature, go hiking and bike riding and horseback riding and all the things that you know, naturalists enjoy. She couldn't do that anymore. Well, she'd heard about some supplements that she took, and it slowed the progression slightly. So then, being a scientist, she decided to go to the food from which these supplements were extracted to do the whole matrix. It goes back a little bit to what Carter was talking about, you know, being the whole culture. Everything, not just the food, but how you ate it. And so she did this, and she came up with her own protocol. It's based on Paleolithic. It's not the typical paleo diet that you see, you know, meat. As a matter of fact, it's 9 cups of fruits and vegetables every day. 4 ounces of grass-fed beef, you know, so it's certainly a plant-based diet if I ever heard one. But the grass-fed beef is so important. Also includes 8 ounces of organ meat per week. So that's only a couple ounces a day. If you don't happen to like organ meat, I love liver and onions, so I could eat that all day. I love it. But anyway, so it turns out that the Western diet, the more people take the Western diet, which is typically the definition of it, is a diet low in fruits and vegetables, high in carbohydrates, high in refined sugar, high in fat, really not very good for us. And as more and more people have been eating it, the incidences of autism, Alzheimer's, MS, and all the other autoimmune diseases has increased dramatically. As a matter of fact, at the turn of the 20th century, autism was 1 in 5,000. 1 in 5,000. Today, it's 1 in 68. By 2030 or 2050, if the geometric progression continues, it will be 1 in 2. Every other child will have autism. Oh, you know? So what's happening? Our kids' IQs are going down due to the pesticides. And, of course, our illustrious head of the EPA, Scott Pruitt, just said that the pesticide that was going to be banned in December is no longer going to be banned, and they're going to use it. So Dow Chemical is happy, and the kids are not. So that will probably accelerate the autism rate. You know, what the heck is going on? I mean, I just don't understand it. I don't know how this can even be legal. This is just, I get so upset when I see this. You know, to heck with people's health, we don't care about you. And that is exactly what Big Ag and Big Pharma and all these large companies, all they care about is profit. That's all they care about is profit. They don't care about you. They don't care about your health. And that's why we're sick. Trust me, that's why we're so darn sick. And it's heartening to see more and more doctors starting to realize that diet is the key to good health. And that there truly is. Now, I also found out on a website, ProPublica, and it was dollars for docs. you can Google that one, dollars for docs, and it shows you punch up Virginia, you'll see a place there to punch up your state, and then there'll be a search box, and you put in Charlottesville and hit that, and you'll see all the kickbacks from pharmaceutical companies and medical device companies that the doctors in the area get. Now, most of them are fairly low, you know, $200-$300. And some of them are higher, $800,000. Some are $5,000. Some are $10,000. One guy, I won't say who it is, one guy, cardiologist, was getting... Oh, let me see. Oh, yeah. In the last 3 years, he got over $3.5 million in payments from medical device companies and pharmaceutical companies, depending on the prescriptions that he wrote. Now, just for a minute, think about it. If the major portion of your income depended on you writing a prescription of a specific drug and you had... four to write, you had four to choose from, and three of them you didn't get anything because those were generics, but one you got, you know, $500 for every prescription you write. Well, you know, or 300, whatever, and you know, the major portion of your income depended on these payments. That's the one you're going to write. Well, is that the one that's the right one for the patient? That's what should be important to you. But unfortunately, a lot of these doctors don't believe that. So we're going to finish up here with my 2-minute drill. Now, I want to ask you, do you believe in God or any other intelligent design model? Then it stands to reason that you must also believe that the diets of the earliest humans, the hunter-gatherers, and the times before committed agriculture and long-distance communication devices, that those diets were also created or intended. They varied, but were always locally sourced and seasonal because that's all that was available. Now, the diets range from pure animal diet 10 months of the year to insects, lizards, and in the Arctic region, to lizards, insects, and amphibians, plus hundreds of plants all year in Africa. Each diet was radically different depending on their location, but all were correct for those particular people. Now, the reason we're so sick today is because we've, as a whole, discarded those intended or created diets that were originally designed for optimum health, depending on where we live. This is the reason here at To Your Health, we are so committed to a community-based food system. And that's a viable way to reduce obesity, type 2 diabetes, and general health care costs, plus all those autoimmune diseases I talked about. And achieving a more cooperative and culturally interconnected local society. The To Your Health staff will also be proactive by working with many of established programs, administrators, and city government officials to further this important agenda. You as listeners can help by volunteering, contributing, and purchasing as much local, sustainably grown and raised food as possible. Your bodies and your children's improved health will thank you in many ways. Well, I just wanted to say I'm MC Blair. And remember, eating real food, mostly from your local providers, is key to your health.